If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome Mary Kissel, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State, now Executive Vice President Stevens Incorporated. Observing Europe. Europe is all a flutter. Why? Emmanuel Macron, the once popular president of France, now advised not to go out in public because of unhappiness amongst the people, has called a snap election for June 30th, first round, and July 7th, second round, to choose a parliament. He will remain president, but the parliament has authority to get to the headlines, and running hard for the dominant position in parliament is a party called the National Rally. This is Marine Le Pen's start party. Many years ago was understood as the far right, the radical right, the fascist right. There were lots of ways to dismiss it. And Macron's been dealing with it for years successfully. Now, however, the headlines in Europe have shifted so that Macron is seen as on the defensive. In fact, the polls indicate he's going to get beaten badly, his party, on June 30th, that there might not even be a runoff. However, this is not just about France. This is about the rise of what are called in Europe far-right parties. Mary, a very good evening to you. This was not your experience at State. These far-right parties are new or have always been seen as marginal. Is there one way to explain why now, why this has happened in Europe? Is this a harbinger for the United States? Is this particular to the pandemic? Is it about Ukraine? Good evening to you, Mary.
Good evening to you, John. I think if there's one overarching lesson from the rise of these really populist conservative parties, it's that traditional political parties on the continent of Europe have mostly failed their constituents. They haven't provided the kind of economic upward mobility and national security that most voters want. And so after really decades of frustration, you see voters in places like France and Germany, the Netherlands, Italy, turning to new parties. And I think Italy is a very interesting case. Giorgia Meloni was really smeared as a sort of fascist when she first rose to office. And yet she's proven to be an incredibly savvy political operator, someone who has understood how to channel voters' concerns, but yet stay away from what might be termed the more extreme elements on the right. And I'd also note that I think this nomenclature of far right is really thrown around in too loose of a fashion. If you say far right, what does that actually mean? Does that simply mean a kind of straightforward conservative agenda of strong national borders and a smaller role for the state in the economy? Or, you know, does it mean something different? And I think the press in particular like to throw that label around to suggest that it means something different, a kind of fascism and authoritarianism, when in fact, these are very high-functioning democracies, and there's no indication that that's the case, particularly in the developed industrial economies in Western Europe. I think what's really happened is that the political left in these countries has moved so far to the left that a traditional conservative agenda they feel is far right, when it's actually the left that's moved to the left in places like, for instance, France, where just this morning the Financial Times ran a headline saying, golly, corporate chiefs are starting to warm to Marine Le Pen because the agenda of the left in France is so extreme and so anti-business and would be so destructive to the economy and to prosperity that they're finding they have to go to Marine Le Pen into a conservative agenda because there's really no other option for them. So interesting dynamics, slightly different in all of the countries. But overall, I think what you're seeing is just the collapse of really ineffective traditional political parties and the rise of new alternatives.
I tell a story about Italy. Giorgia Meloni is the prime minister. She represented the Brothers of Italy, which was understood to be Mussolini's party. They emphasized that during the campaign last year. In other words, not just fascists, but the original fascists, Italian fascists. And Giorgia Meloni, and leading a coalition, then gained authority in the parliament, and since then has done nothing but be popular, despite the bumps. And here's one of her winning ways. She made a speech saying, I know when I campaigned, I said I would solve immigration. I would do this, I would do that. Well, it turns out to be much more difficult than I knew. It's much more expensive, and we can't do it on our own. We need the European Union to help us. Immigration is not a simple story to solve. We're vulnerable to the people from Tunisia, but others have different routes in. And so, therefore, this collectively has to be done over time. The Italian people applauded. There, Mary, is an example of the star of the G7 being candid as a populist with the Italian people. And you know that's a quarrelsome group, has been since the Second War. And yet she's strikingly popular, more popular than any of the other leaders at G7. Is that a road forward for Marine Le Pen or for AFD or for any of the other far-right parties?
Well, I think voters in democracies appreciate it when their leaders tell them the truth and level with them. And in fact, that's often the best way to deal with very complicated issues, immigration of which is one. And she's correct that Italy on its own, despite its extremely capable Navy, is not able to deal with the surge itself. And so I think she did Italians the favor of speaking to them like adults and honestly. And I think other leaders could learn from that. Take Justin Trudeau. You just mentioned the G7. He's been in office for years, and it's very clear from the data over his term that Canadians have gotten relatively poorer in a striking way compared to, for instance, their counterparts in the United States. And yet Trudeau has made no U-turns, no admissions that maybe his policies are not achieving the ends that he desires or promised to voters. And he's headed toward a crushing defeat. Look at the United Kingdom, where the Conservative Tory Party has presided for, I think, 13 years now, something like that, did not at all do what they promised when Brexit happened, did not fundamentally liberate the British economy or impose stronger national defense and deal with the boats and coming from immigrants from France and other places. And Britons have suffered. The Tories adopted a green agenda completely at odds with their party's principles, which raised electricity and energy prices. They didn't tap the vast resources that they have of natural gas through fracking. And they're going to pay. They're going to face a huge wipeout on July 4th. And they're also facing the rise, speaking of, new parties on the right, of Nigel Farage, the impetus behind Brexit, who is really threatening to take an enormous number of votes from the Tories. I mean, the Tories, I don't know if the Tories will collapse completely, but it's clear that the momentum is with Nigel Farage and reform, because he's just standing up and telling the truth. He's saying, the Tories have failed you. They don't stick to their principles. I'm going to reclaim conservative principles. Follow me. And he's getting a big audience for that. Doesn't mean conservatives in Britain are going to win. I think Labour will rightly prevail, given the conservative record, such as it is. But I think Nigel Farage's popularity rests in his honesty and his straightforward nature. Voters know what they're getting with him. Whereas with these, elitist Tories, they're told one thing and they get something else, and they're going to pay for that at the polls.
In addition, rise of the right, the shrinking of the Greens 5 years after they were the hottest thing in the solar system. We were all going to lock arms and solve net zero together. And now not only are they shrinking at the European Union level, they're shrinking in Germany, where the Greens are part of the government. ESG is no longer polite talk, I'm told, in Europe. I don't know if that's the case here, because we tend to we hold on to virtuous signaling long past its sell-by date. But in any event, did we see green collapse coming, Mary? Was this predicated by something, or just the public got tired of no performance?
Well, I think it ultimately comes down to pocketbook issues. Voters were essentially told that they could adopt an agenda of, you know, power from renewable energy and pay no significant economic cost for it. Germany under Merkel shuttering nuclear plants, and, you know, Britain's conservatives adopting a net zero agenda, which means a net zero carbon emission agenda that came out of the Paris Climate Accords under Obama. And what they found was that they had extremely high inflation. Their energy costs went through the roof. They were already high. And then Russia came along and invaded Ukraine. And suddenly Europe had to scramble to find new sources of energy. Although I would note that they're going back to Russia. Interesting side note there, which tells you something about the U.S. energy agenda, that we're not stepping in and fully replacing to the degree that the Europeans want their energy needs in the wake of that war. So I think the Russia invasion was a huge wake-up call, the reshuffling of, you know, energy supplies, the just years and years of crippling high prices. And it's just too much, and voters don't buy it anymore. In the U.S., I think it's a different discussion because we are a much wealthier economy. We can absorb to a slightly higher degree those higher prices. But ultimately, the ESG agenda in the United States has come down to more of a fiduciary issue with shareholders, where we've had a debate about whether or not investing in companies that get handouts from the government to do environmentally, quote unquote, good things. Is that, should that be a requirement given that the returns are low? It's a totally different discussion than it is in Europe. But overall, again, just going back to the collapse of traditional political parties in Europe, if you don't perform for your voters, if you don't level with them about the challenges that you face, if you don't do a U-turn when your policies aren't working, you're going to pay at the polls. And I think it's a good sign for European democracies that new parties are emerging. Voters are getting actual choice, as they are, for instance, in Britain. And I think that will lead ultimately to a more competitive democratic system in these countries and better outcomes for voters.
Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President, Stevens Incorporated, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State. We're coming home to America and the Biden administration and its foreign policy. Uniform around the world. Ruhe, Ruhe, Ruhe. That's German for keep it quiet. I'm John Batchelor.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.